we can do so much better as technicians. Maybe something that a customer doesn't recognize, but just doing little things like that, that's where experience and time put in is the difference between a one-year technician to a 10-year technician.
Beyond the Wrench with Jay Ganinen from Wrenchway.
Welcome back to Beyond the Wrench. My name is Jay Ganinen, and I am your host. On today's show, we welcome one of my favorite people in the industry, Josh Arnold, master technician who has done a lot in his young career. And today he's here to talk about advice for technicians. And we're going to go through a list that he compiled called the 7 tips from his 7 years as a technician. So I am really looking forward to this show and diving into those tips that you've learned over the years in your journey, Josh. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jay.
I think we're past even recurring guests now. You're just almost getting to the level of co-host here. You're fourth time on the episode.
Yep. Trying to take your job slowly.
You would be very, very good at it. So, we've gone through your background in the past. We've talked a lot about your young journey to becoming a master diagnostic tech with Toyota, with Subaru, and a lot of what you've done for the work to get there. Yep. And we've talked through the highs and lows of the industry, and you came to me with an idea of talking through 7 tips that you would have from your 7 years in the industry. What kind of prompted you to think of that?
Personally, Jay, it's just because I think I know people of my generation pretty well. And like I told you, short attention span. I want to make something short to the point. You know, the podcasts are great, but I feel like making these 7 tips, maybe breaking them up a little bit smaller, whatever it might be. We want to hit a younger generation with this. I'm not really targeting the old guys out there in the industry. I'm sure they know all of this. It's nothing new to them. But I want to make sure that it's as easy and as accessible to them as possible. So that's kind of where the idea came from, and we'll see how it works out.
If somehow you missed one of the prior episodes with Josh, I would encourage you to go listen to them, because there's some great, great advice in what Josh has given us, and it's kind of real-time advice as he's going through his journey as a technician. And, you know, I think when we look at this, you've done a lot of mentorship already, mentoring others. And at such a young age, that's such an impressive thing to me. I'm assuming you're still kind of on that path of mentoring young people, right? And mentoring some people that really aren't that much younger than you.
That's where I find most of my passion, honestly. I do like fixing cars. I do like doing the job. But the challenge of trying to train people, especially younger people, that I think a lot of the guys that have been in the industry a long time don't quite understand how they work and how they operate. It's where I find my joy. It can be frustrating at times, as anything, but it's been the new challenge for me and something I enjoy doing very much.
All right, let's dive into these 7 tips. Okay. Do you have the list in front of you?
I do have the list. I came prepared because I need it for this one.
Well, let's start off with number one.
Yeah, number one's a good place to start. And I did kind of make these lists in some way tied to my experience at 7 years. It may not line up exactly, but I think I tried to lay it out as much as you're going to start with this and kind of work your way through. But my biggest and my first one that I see every time working with apprentices is focus on the skill, not on the time, not on the money. That first year that you're in there, you're just frankly going to be probably terrible at your job unless your dad's been working with you in the shop since you were like 5 years old, right? So a lot of guys, they get super frustrated initially, and just that they're not making the warranty time. They're not able to, keep up with everybody else in the shop looking around them. And that can lead to a lot of frustration and potentially, you know, early in leaving the industry because of it. So slow is smooth. Smooth is fast is something that I've heard a lot. You know, it's been around. It's nothing new. But I live by that. Is practice slow the speed will come with time, especially if you're a dealer technician and you work on the same stuff.
This is something you changed my perspective on a little bit, and it wasn't even perspective. It was more of a different outlook or a different set of eyes on flat rate as a young technician. And I've used this example a lot since we did that that podcast. I can't remember if it was the last one or the time before that. But yeah, so when we talked through your thinking as you entered the flat rate world, in that you viewed it as an advantage because you didn't feel the pressure of having to put out a certain amount of time or a certain amount of work in a certain amount of time. And I think so much of it comes down to who's leading the shop at that point, and if that allows you to afford that patience, right? So for a young person that's out there and you're looking at shops to go work for, that's a really, really key factor, is making sure that you're working with somebody that is going to have the patience with you to allow that. Now, on the other side of that, when you said focus on the skill, one of the things you did early on in your career that I believe has made you really, really successful is that you put in extra time when you weren't being paid, right? And I think it's that, you know, you took pride in the craft. You viewed it as a craft, and you wanted to very much learn the systems and how they work and how to do a specific job. How important was that to that skill set when you're talking about, you know, being smooth?
I'll be honest, in the moment of doing it, it doesn't feel like that. It's only now that I've been doing it for so long that I realize how important that initial couple of years of just putting in the time and practicing really pays off. But at the moment, I'll be honest, that's 100%. I did not feel this way. And that's why part of this list is that a lot of these things you probably won't realize cashing in on, you know, reap what you sow type of thing, until you're later in your career. But it's important that you do it at the start. And you know, I think that's a good portion of why we lose people early on.
I agree. And I view it as like the compound effect, right? And there's a book by Darren Hardy that talks about the compound effect, and just the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And it might not be an immediate success, but being able to get kind of those wins stacked on each other. And maybe when you figure out if it's something you're battling with the electrical side and you're struggling to get your head around it, if you work at it until it clicks, then all of a sudden that's going to make a bunch of other stuff go smoother.
Yep. Not to mention now I guarantee you can teach somebody who has the same issue exactly what they're struggling with. You know, when you remember what you went through and you can pass it on to the next person, it makes them feel a lot better.
Just great advice there for your number one. Everything else has a lot to live up to that number one. What do you have for number two?
So this one's important, financial literacy, but I called it save for a rainy day. Being a flat rate technician, you'll make your highs, and everyone loves those highs, right? But we don't talk about the lows too often, or maybe we talk about the lows too much, whichever it might be. You'll have your ups and downs being flat rate. It is not consistent pay, or at least not in my experience. You know, I have my good, really good months, and I have my okay months, and then I've had a couple low months. As you progress in your career, it's going to level out a little bit more. Like, I'd say that it gets a little more consistent because you're a lot more experienced, and you're a lot more able to predict how things are going to go in your job and everything like that, but it still has its highs and lows. Financial literacy is something that I work with my apprentices on a lot, and this isn't something that's in the dealership. I mean, it could be in some ways, but it is outside the dealership. Save your money, invest in retirement, do all this boring stuff that no one wants to do at a young age, because there are going to be times where you don't have that big paycheck and you're going to need to fall back on something. So, you know, that's a very important part of the job. And again, when you have people that don't practice this skill, when they have that low month, I mean, that can be crippling, especially nowadays.
Maybe some of the most important advice you'll have throughout this list is that financial literacy piece. And I think this is something we've talked a lot about in content, and I think dealerships, shops, doesn't matter who you are. If you can bring in a professional to talk to your team about financial literacy and the power of having a budget and the power of saving money, it can be really, really impactful. Because what do we see in industry a lot of times? We see that young technician go buy that big Snap-on or Mac, you know, box with a bunch of tools that, you know, they may or may not need. And it puts them in a really bad hole. And I think we've all been in shops where you see technicians running when the tool truck comes in because they don't have the money to pay their bill that month. And it sucks. Like it sucks when somebody gets to that position where you over leverage yourself with the tool truck and on top of all of your other bills, right? Just normal day-to-day life. But that tool truck, and you know, they're going to try and sell you on the payment, not on just like we sell cars, right? We're selling the payment, not the price. Yep. And that's the same thing that tool trucks do. So being able to understand that what tools you actually need versus, you know, what's kind of nice to have, there's a big difference there. And if you can put that additional money that you were going to spend on something stupid into the bank, you're going to be much further ahead, right?
Yeah. And I was going to say, and 2 and 3 on my list here are pretty much the same. But something I wanted to mention on tool trucks, because, you know, we do hear a lot of negative about them too. I feel bad for them. They have kind of the same boat as we do. When I started, I had no credit, right? I was 18, didn't have any credit history, no money to my name, anything like that. I did hop on the Snap-on truck and I did use their credit program. And the first credit loan I got was 29.5% interest, which, you know, massive, right? You're like, oh. But
it's worse than a credit card.
Yes. The thing is, I used that and I paid it off before the interest accrued because they have a 3 months no interest. So you can use this to your advantage, because I actually just had to apply for one of my Snap-on loans again, you know, to purchase something bigger. And I had my interest rate with them actually dropped to 9% now. My credit went from a score of 600 when I started out all the way up to 800. And I've used the tool trucks, you know, obviously, you know, I've done other things too, but I did use them to my advantage. If you pay it off within the 3 month period, you get no interest charged to you and it builds your credit. You can reopen an account. And since you've been building that history with them, they're more willing to loan you and your credit continues to go up and up. I'm not going to say that's for everybody, but again, it goes back to, if you understand financial literacy, they're not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how you use them.
Boy, is that a good point. And stuff that you were probably going to buy anyway, you use to build your credit. And I think that the important part is, you know, whatever they give you for a credit line, don't just think, all right, you know, they approved me. Yeah, they approved me for $5,000. I'm going to spend $4,999. Like, still, you still pay that back and you still need to be on top of that. And I think it can be really tempting when you, I mean, I remember growing up and going into a tool truck. It's like the candy store, right? You walk in there and you see some stuff that, I mean, just looks awesome. And you buy it, and then I think you always know when you bought the wrong thing because you have buyer's remorse, right? You kind of go and like, did I really need that?
Yeah. So going into number three, I think it's perfect segue that we're on the tool trucks, because number three for me was, do not buy the best to be the best. Develop your tools as you develop yourself. I'm a big Snap-on guy. I have a lot of Snap-on, but I didn't start out that way. And so when my apprentices come over and they see the box filled with all this shiny Snap-on and they're like, oh, you have so much into it and everything, and they get that itch that they want to go out on a tool truck and buy just to so they can have what I have, I try to remind them that I started out with a 300-piece Kobalt set. I used Gear Wrench, Amazon. I had the cheapest of the cheese, Harbor Freight, you know, all that. And it's been over the 7 years that I've developed it. So it doesn't come instantly, which is frustrating because you want the nice stuff. But buy slow and wait and try out some other people's tools in the shop, because not all ratchets are the same. Personally, I like the Snap-on ones the best, but some people like Matco, some people like Mac. If you have those availabilities, kind of use the advantage of trying out different things before you purchase it. But I will say, as you advance into your career, I've seen some master techs that have only Harbor Freight tools and have bare minimum amounts of tools. And I think that's a detriment, honestly, because they didn't invest into their tools. Because there's a certain point in your career where it's like, okay, you don't have a compression tester, you don't have a cylinder leak down gauge. You're a master tech. You should have those tools at your disposal because that's part of the job.
That's great advice. I think I agree. I mean, and when I say don't go on and buy a bunch of fancy tools, that's what I was talking about is exactly what you just said there. I would love to have a full set of Snap-on, right? Like they're beautiful tools. They are very functional tools. It's a Wisconsin company, so I got to support Wisconsin, right? Yeah. But you know, it is, and I've used this story a million times, but you know, I was 12 years old and I bought an $85 set of Mac screwdrivers, which when you're 12 years old makes zero sense, like zero sense. So when you talk about buyer's remorse, even at 12 years old, I was like, well, that was a stupid purchase. Like, why did I do that?
But I
do like the advice too. You know, we hear it often, you know, if you have to ask to borrow it two or three times, you should probably buy it for yourself, but feel that out. I know so many techs that buy things that they shouldn't. We actually have a TikTok video for Wrenchway that did really, really well. I think that was over 1 million views, but it was asking, what tool don't you use in your toolbox? Some of them, you're like, they're expensive tools just to sit there.
There's been a few. I always try to buy a tool, and if I don't have an immediate use for it, I try to find a way to build it in to something that I'm using. So I bought a thermal imager, which is not something that you need on a daily basis by any means. And it was kind of like, oh, it's just kind of there. It's on sale. You know how that's how they get you in the door. But now that I bought it, I've used it to diagnose cat issues, wheel bearings, funny enough, AC, obviously, diagnosis, stuff like that. So when I buy a tool and I feel like maybe it wasn't the best purchase, I do try to build it into what I'm going to do. So now that anytime I do an AC service, I provide a thermal gun image of the vents and everything like that to show the temperatures that are working. It's not necessarily needed, but it's something that kind of upped my game and allowed me to have a cool tool to play with. So,
well, we talked about the importance of visual inspections before, right? And having that digital inspection and the photos that can help support what you're saying, that is another tool. And I love how you kind of maybe adjusted your approach because of that tool. And it probably did make you a better tech in terms of being able to sell the work or show somebody that, you know, the work you did was good. So I think that's great advice. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Wrench. We'd like to take a minute to talk about this week's sponsor, Thermo King. Look out your window. Within minutes of being on the road, you will likely see a Thermo King refrigeration unit on a commercial vehicle. As the worldwide leader in sustainable transport climate control solutions, Thermo King is the heartbeat of the global cold chain. Our technology helps bring fresh food and other perishable items to communities around the world. Technician talent is what keeps such important assets moving. By joining a local Thermo King dealership, you become part of an elite team of technical talent and get to experience working with premium products. Each Thermo King dealership is family-owned and operated, offering a smaller company work environment backed by the training and support of a global industry leader. Thermo King dealers hire the best talent in the industry because we believe the world needs and deserves freshness. Think you have what it takes? We would love to have you join our team. Visit Wrenchway now to see openings in your area. All right. What else do we have?
Number four here. This is going to be probably more towards the dealer side. So those independent guys, you know, don't be too sad. But basically, something that I've learned, production, certification, and tenure equals money. And we've kind of talked about this here. These are the three things in order of what a dealership and a shop usually is going to look at to pay you. And I think a lot of people get these mixed up, you know, sometimes the certification's in the top of their list. Sometimes the tenure's at the top of the list. Production is what you bring to the table. Profit sharing business is flat rate. And if you don't bring in your fair share, I'm sorry to say, but there's going to be people that are going to get paid more to you than you. And then, you know, but it's different for each person because some people say, well, I've been here 20 years. I deserve this amount of money. And there's a case for that. But also, what are you bringing to the table to the company? Because if you have been there for 20 years, but you're only a lube tech, I mean, what are you bringing to the table? Not trying to devalue any experience, but there is some truth to that. You have to have these in the order of production, certification, and tenure. And that's always how they're going to look at you.
That is solid. And I honestly don't even think that's just flat rate. I think that that's applicable to any shop because at the end of the day, you have to run a profitable shop. You have to be able to pay your bills and to invest in the new tooling and the different requirements that you need to keep up with technology right now. Yeah. You have to run a profitable shop. And if I'm paying you as a technician a whole bunch of money, but the output isn't coming out of it, that's a recipe for going broke as a shop. And so, you know, I've had those conversations with some more experienced technicians that want to get paid more. And it, you know, to me is more of just a math problem of sitting down with them and showing them the math. And I think that's where a lot of shops go wrong is that they don't take that step to show somebody what their impact is. And if you don't show them, it can be really easy just to sit out in the shop and, you know, you put in your time and you're like, well, why am I not getting the raises that I want? Why have I been here for so long and nothing's happening? And a lot of it comes down to communication. So I think that is such a good point. The production is definitely number one. Totally agree with that. Certifications, that might be where the difference between dealer and independent is because, you know, some independents will really, really value ASEs. Some really don't care about them. And then 10-year, agreed. I mean, you can have that 20-year lube tech or you can have that 5-year very, very great technician.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think from a business perspective, when you look at that scenario, as a manager, I'm going to put more into that young technician because I've got more years that I'm, you know, like should have out of this technician. And they're probably, you know, they're probably just entering their prime at that point. And so, you know, I'm going to stick training into them. I'm going to help coach them. I'm probably, you know, as bad as this sounds, maybe going to take a little bit more interest in their future in trying to develop their career plan. And so that, again, is no knock at that 20-year lube tech because that's not what we're trying to do. But I think over time, you just deliver that consistency and you deliver that, you know, it's reliability. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like we need reliability, but there's also a ceiling to what I can pay you because if the output doesn't equal more profitability. Absolutely. I think that was such a great point. And I love the order that you put those in because I think you're right.
Yep. And it's something I've had to learn too. You know, it doesn't, sometimes you get frustrated, you know, but it's something to step back and look at. And as I've stepped into more of a mentorship role, I have to understand that some of these guys that are just starting out, their production's a lot higher than what I'm going to produce. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm bringing anything less to the table to the dealership, but it does, you know, there's something to be said that these guys are making more money for the company, and in some way, that is valuable in its own way, you know.
How do you keep a young tech in the right headspace here? Because what I see in the industry, obviously, everybody needs techs. And what I see is a really easy thing to happen is that that young technician can look at, you know, you as a, you know, the manufacturer that you represent and say, okay, you've got all of these standards that I've got to hit.
Yeah.
If I hop over to this other manufacturer, I don't need those certifications. I don't need those. Or if I go to an independent shop, I don't need those. And if I'm that young technician and I'm very ambitious and I want to buy a boat and a new truck. You look at how the fastest way to get to that money. And it might not necessarily be looking at like the long term of sticking with the brand and really learning that brand. Then you start hopping around and you don't really ever get that consistency in learning the vehicle, right? And so I think that's one of the biggest pieces of advice I would have for a young technician is know it might take a little bit of time, but if you stick with it, it's going to pay off in spades. And we talked about that in a prior podcast too, to where you're starting to see, you're starting to reap the rewards of the work that you put in.
No, I fully agree. And the best thing I can say is you've really got to catch them when they're thinking like that and try to impart some older man wisdom into them. You know, you got to be like, yeah, you can jump across the fence there and go make more money now. But, you know, what I like about the manufacturers I work for most is that they offer that training, because as we talked about before, being a technician, things become a little bit monotonous as you go. And actually, funny enough, number five here is going to segue into that. It's continuous improvement. This one's coming straight from Toyota with their Kaizen. But it's very important that as a technician, as you go through your career, things will get boring, especially at a dealer level, right? We're seeing a lot of things, but oil changes, brake flushes, brake jobs, all that stuff that you're going to do a ton of, they become monotonous. And, you know, some people can push through that. I'm not one of those people. I've always struggled with it. So my advice to anyone that's having that is find a way to constantly improve your quality. Make it fresh, make it new again, buy that thermal imager, whatever it is that's going to excite you to still do those same old jobs or change up your process. Always make it better, don't make it worse. But mix it up a little bit. So recently, this last year, every year I take a step back and kind of look at what I can do to improve. One year it was multi-point inspections. One year it was test driving every single vehicle that comes in the door, just little things like that. I step back and I say, how can I make this better and kind of mix it up? Well, this year it's every cowling that comes in that has leaves, I take a little vacuum, clean it out. And just little things like that. It doesn't have to be a huge change, but it mixes it up. It allowed me to buy another little tool to play around with, you know, something to keep it fresh. And over time, what's going to happen is your multi-point inspection, whatever, just your daily process is going to be so much more than where you started. And it reminds me of a story, or not a story, but something that I saw at the dealership. And it wasn't even a technician, but we had our printers replaced out. And so the first guy that I got that came in and replaced them, he was a younger guy, 20 years old, and he came in, he took the printer out, put the new printer in, set it up, called it good. Well, a couple weeks later, we had another printer replaced, and this guy was probably near the end of his career. I don't know what he did for the whole career. Maybe he just replaced his printers. The difference was when he replaced our printer, he cleaned the desk, he cleaned all the cords, he cleaned everything that he touched, and it looks so much better. And he probably never gets recognized for that in any way. And that just, that kind of stuck out to me, because we can do so much better as technicians, maybe something that a customer doesn't recognize. But just doing little things like that, that's where experience and time put in is the difference between a 1 year technician to a 10 year technician.
What a great story. I think that is so incredible. I think we see that throughout our daily lives. If you have somebody come do a remodel job on your house or something like that, you hear the horror stories of somebody getting that done and then they leave a complete mess behind. It looks so unprofessional. I know in my experience, I actually I took my truck into a dealership to get the service. It was a newer truck and came with the maintenance package off the bat. So take the truck in, and I got in my truck and there's oil on the steering wheel. It smells like oil in the truck. Nice. And growing up in this industry, I was just like, how does somebody let that go? How does a tech not see that this is a newer truck? And I get people have off days, right? Sometimes you're just not overly motivated. And you got to figure out a way to motivate yourself. But it is so, when you have your pride and joy in there, and that's how people view their vehicles a lot of times.
Yeah.
Some people just view it as, you know, their means of transportation, but some, you know, take a lot of pride in their vehicle. And if you have greasy fingerprints all over, there's oil on the rug, on the floor, it looks so unprofessional to not only that technician, but to the shop, to our industry. It discredits everything that we're trying to build here as an industry, right? Yeah. And I just, everything you're saying is like what we should be doing. We should be striving to be the best of the best.
Yeah. And that's how the money's going to follow, and everything else that we're all talking about is, unfortunately, you know, in this world, you've got to put your foot first and prove it. So by changing the way that we are, we're going to see a change in the industry.
I do wish that old guy would get recognition for what he did for the printer job, right?
And
yes. Because it is funny how you can learn from other industries too, right? You can learn when you have a great experience somewhere. And if you have your mindset, which is really that growth mindset of how I get better and how I tweak what I do each day to get a little bit better, you can steal from other industries. You can, you know, be able to take things from other people and add to your skill set. I always look at like basketball players, and I think it was, you know, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, that every single year they're adding a new skill and working with somebody over the summer to add a new skill to what they do. And that sounds very similar to what you're doing. You just keep stacking. And I think that is phenomenal.
Yep. I know. And it works out. And like I said, sometimes you don't notice it, but then you look back and you're like, wow, it's a lot different. Yeah. But number six, this is, like I said, these are kind of in order of my career. So, you know, something that you have to take in fact is you do have to always train your replacement. You know, if you want to move up, we've talked about this before, that you're going to have somebody in place to fill your role. And I wanted to add the note of with the expectation that they're better than you. Whenever I take an apprentice on, I always say, I want you to be better than me. And I say, I'm not going to make that easy, but I said, I want you to be better than me. And kind of looking around the shop now that I've done five or six of them in our shop and they're starting to season and things like that, there have been some days where they have done things better than me. And it's been a little hard to take. I imagine I'll feel the same way when my son gets older and surpasses. But you do feel a little bit of pride in it as well. You know, you're super proud to see somebody that you spent a lot of time investing in finally reach that point where they do something that to kind of set you back and like, okay, well, you know, all right. So, yeah.
It takes the right person to do that kind of thing, too. I think what you said there was that I want you to be very successful, but I'm not going to make it easy. And I think the part that a lot of our industry misses is the first part. I want you to be successful. We don't communicate that very well. We say we're going to make it hard on you. we would fly right past the part where we want them to be a good person and that we're trying to make them into a great technician to the point to where, you know what, I'm not even intentionally going to make your life a living hell. So I do think the why is so powerful, right? Why are you pushing me? Why are you doing this? Because then in the back of their mind, if they don't know that, they're just going to assume that you have ill intentions, that you're not doing it for the right reasons. And so if you set the stage up front, that really, really helps you grow that young person.
Yeah, and remind them often because they will forget, especially when the days are hard. You know, just remind them what they're going for because, like I said, you're like a deer in the headlight type of thing where most of that first part of your career is kind of traumatic, honestly, depending on what you got going on. But yeah, you're just like, you know, nothing sometimes and you're just there. And then I always like to make playful jokes with them. I usually try to test the waters, but I'm not like super nice about it sometimes. Like I'll joke around with them and I'll make fun of them when they make something dumb and do, you know, it's just, that's what's fun for me and keeps it interesting. And that's the same way that I got trained up myself. But I mean, if you're just all business all the time, that's kind of boring. And if you're all just making fun of them, that's not right because, you know, eventually you're going to get through to them and they're going to take you seriously. But pull them aside once in a while, tell them it's okay and that you're just poking around.
That balance is so important. And I remember being a young technician, I learned so much better from people that were a little bit more laid back than I did the ones that were, you know, grind your nose. And if you make a mistake, you know, kind of rub your nose in it, right? And I don't think that's an overly effective way of training or mentoring somebody. And I do think if you can loosen them up, I think young people, and this goes for not just young people, this is everybody, but when we make a mistake, we tend to beat ourselves up more than anybody else could. And so if you're just there to pile on to what they've already done to beat themselves up, that's where you're going to start to see that attrition, because there's no confidence left and they're just going to leave.
Yep. Yep. And go based off your person too, because I had some people that are so overly confident that they do need a little bit more berating than the
humble pie.
Yeah, exactly. And trust me, that's one of the best things, like satisfying things to serve up is a little bit of humble pie. But, you know, some guys will be like, I know how to do your job. I know what to do. And then my favorite thing to do is just set them in a stall, let them try to do, I know something's difficult, and just let them over there. And that's, just know who you're dealing with and cater it to them. And then the other thing that's super important is just build that personal relationship with them too, because you're not going to be able to joke and constructively criticize somebody unless they know you're looking out for their best interest. And you usually can't do that on a professional setting. At least me, I've never been able to reach that level without spending some time with these people outside of work, or at least, you know, just talking with them extensively.
What a great point that is too. Go grab a beer with them, or go do something, go to the go-kart track, do something where you're creating kind of that relationship. And from a mentorship standpoint, I think that is incredibly important. But then you kind of peel the curtains back, right? It's not I think we've all been in the situation where we come into a shop and that very, very experienced, very, very great technician is terrifying, right? To ask a question to do anything to. And if you can get them out of the shop, and maybe it's as simple as firing up the grill, you know, having them over to
barbecue
your place.
Always works. Yep. That's what I've
barbecue always works. Break some bread, and I think you're further ahead. And I think from a mentorship standpoint, you probably start to like the person a little bit more once you start talking to them and you start to understand their background and maybe some of the challenges that they've gone through in their lives to get to this point. Yep. Some people's backstories are fascinating, even at a young age.
Oh, yeah. And if you do a mentorship right, you probably should end up friends with this person once that mentorship is done. I mean, officially, at least. If you've done it right, they'll come back to you for advice and you'll go to them. Like that's how it works. You're sharing a piece of yourself with the person for sure.
Great advice. Technicians, have you checked out Wrenchway yet? Wrenchway is a free online community for automotive and diesel professionals. Whether you're looking for a job or not, Wrenchway makes it easy to explore new opportunities, stay up to date on what's going on in the automotive and diesel communities in your area, and helps improve and promote the technician profession. Check out all of the job details you care about before you apply or interview with Wrenchway Top Shops. Details like photos of the shop and answers to the questions you actually care about instead of the same old copy and paste job description you see everywhere else. Open to new job opportunities but don't want to apply yet? Create an anonymous reverse job post and let shops reach out to you and see what's going on with the industry in your area through Wrenchway's Shop Talk. Join the Wrenchway online community for free by visiting wrenchway.com or by downloading the Wrenchway mobile app. Link is in the show notes. What are we on to number seven already?
We're on to number seven, last one. And this is the most recent to me, you know, that I've learned in the most recent time is don't ever waste an opportunity. Whatever that might be, big, small, if you get asked to go do something, weigh it super heavily, and you probably should be doing it. If it makes you uncomfortable, if it's scary, if you're nervous or anything like that, you should do it. And the best example I have of this is going to the Subaru competition in New Jersey. If you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be going and competing in front of a bunch of high-ups for Subaru and doing that, I would have told you, no way I'm doing it. And even when I initially signed up for it, I was still a little bit nervous, but luckily I had another guy in the shop who's been there just about as long as I have. And he says, you should do it. You're the perfect person for it. And he gave me the confidence to actually sign up for it. But don't waste an opportunity, because if I hadn't gone to that, the things I'd miss out on would be huge. And the life experience would be, you know, huge. And you don't know. And that's the sad part, is you would never know.
It is important to have somebody in your corner that is going to push you to do those things too, right? Whether it's a spouse, a coworker, a manager, whoever it is, find that person that pushes you to get better, because, you know, it, there's the common saying that you are the five people that you hang out with the most, right?
Yep.
And if you find yourself evaluating that crowd that you hang out with, whether that's in the shop, whether that's in your personal life, and they're not pushing you to get better, they're not pushing you to do something out of your comfort zone, you need, not that you need to find different friends, but you need to find those people that are going to push you, and you have to embrace that push too. You can't just push back on somebody that's trying to push you to get better, because that is incredibly impactful. And I'll use an example right now. Just recently moved back to my hometown. Over the years, probably put on more weight than I needed to, and definitely wasn't caring about diet or exercise. And I had a friend of mine who's very physically fit, like just in really good physical condition. And he wanted me to come play basketball with him. And I'm like, listen, man, if I go out there, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And I love basketball. I love playing basketball, but going into a setting where you're playing, you know, pretty intense pickup ball, just kind of going back and forth full court at each other.
Yeah.
I'm like, in the back of my mind, I was just like, I ain't doing it. Right. I'm not doing it. I'd love to, but I'm not. And so he kept pestering me and saying, you need to come play it in every Sunday before they play Sunday nights with text. When you coming out? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do this? And finally, I think I did it just to shut him up, just to go. And I went, and the first night, you know, obviously painful after I was done, because I'm not in good physical shape, but I'm working on getting there. Yeah. But I felt great at the end of it. Right. And the same thing goes for with public speaking, right? I've now spoken in front of large audiences a bunch. And at first, it's terrifying, but it took a push from somebody to say, just do it. Like, what, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to learn from it regardless. And and last week I was at a conference. It was the Auto Dealer Association of Milwaukee, the Adam. And they had a decent sized crowd. It wasn't anything huge. It was probably 100 people in a room, and hop up and didn't even think anything of it. And I didn't, at the time, didn't even really think about it. And then on the drive home, it's like, man, if that's
that was easy
5 years ago, I was like, I would have been sweating uncontrollably and not being able to really control my emotions. But because I've done it so much now it just became second nature. Right. And it's that kind of stuff that really translates in anything you do in your life. But when you're talking about that as a technician, I think that's just brilliant advice.
Yeah. And there's a lot of little opportunities that come along. Maybe you get a chance to go to a high school or talk to some students, or maybe a training or something, or just whatever it might be. If you're nervous about it, there's probably a good reason why, and you should still probably go. I mean, there's a couple exceptions to that rule, but I think that's pretty true. If you're if you're nervous about doing it, you might want to do it.
I think there's, at some point down the line, it's interesting to me, because there's, as you talk to people in business, there are business coaches, there are people that are, they kind of do everything we just talked about for business owners or business leaders or just leaders in general, that they push you, right? Just like a coach would in sports. They're going to push you to get better. And I almost feel like at some point we're going to get to there with a technician, right? Where we have a coach for technicians to be able to push them and hold them accountable in a way that maybe a manager can't. You know, you're getting somebody to push them to expand their skill sets and push them to get better. Because as technicians make more and more money, which we're seeing real time right now, you're going to want to put more into your development plan, because the more you develop, going back to your point number four with productivity being the number one thing, along with the certifications, if somebody pushes you, you're probably going to be in a better spot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the industry is due for a big change, and I think it's going to be technicians making a lot of money and being way different than what we are today. And I want to be here
agree.
For it.
We're seeing it, right? I mean, We're seeing the transition before our eyes, even in the last 2 years, 3 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
I think some of the things, and this is we're actually going to talk about this a little bit in some future content, is there are shops that are listening right now. There are shops that are changing and adapting to treat technicians better. And it's really fun to see, because I think there are some shops operating at just such a top-notch level now that maybe weren't before or weren't listening. And I think the technician complaints were very, very valid. Whereas now, when you look at maybe a Facebook message and you see, or a Facebook group, and you see some of those comments, you're like, yeah, you know, I get the complaint, but there's a lot of shops that are starting to adapt, and your complaints wouldn't be valid with them.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely we're improving, and I'm glad to be part of it in any little way that I can. And I look forward to seeing what a technician is in 10 years.
Me too. Hopefully we're still doing the podcast then, and then we'll have you back on in 10 years and for your 500th time, and then we'll be able to
I'll have 17 tips.
I'm going to hold you to that. That would be good. Well, thank you so much. This is a little bit of a shorter show, which we kind of planned on going into it. And I think I love the way you laid out the tips. I think all of the tips were fantastic and on point. And the what you delivered there was just unbelievable. So I think that's this advice. If you have young technicians out there, I would encourage you to have them listen to this episode, because so much of what you said is true. We see it in all kinds of technicians, especially young technicians. I think it's just great advice all around. So appreciate you being back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jay. It's always fun.
That wraps up this week's episode of Beyond the Wrench. Be sure to tune in next week for another brand new episode. As a reminder, don't forget to rate and follow Beyond the Wrench on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps us get Beyond the Wrench in front of other fantastic shop owners, managers, technicians, and dealers just like you, so we can continue to help improve, promote, and grow this amazing industry. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week.